supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we always tell you to put the pruners away when the weather gets cold. So drop those pruners, step away from your plants, and don't do anything to clean up your landscape until you hear the question of the week, which is coming up after lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. James, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being had, James. Where are you?
I'm calling from Fishtown, Philadelphia.
Oh, the Fishtown neighborhood in between,
yes, sir.
In between Port Richmond and Frankfort. I went to 90%, I think, of the kids I went to high school with, Northeast Catholic High School for Boys, were Fishtonians. What can we do for James from a storied neighborhood in Philadelphia?
Well, Mike, I'm calling you because, you know, over the last, I don't know, maybe about a month ago, we've had some fairly nice weather in the area, and we've had some, tried to have some, I should say, some dinners out back in the yard with, you know, my wife and kid, but we seem to always be kind of fighting off flies, and these just seem to be your standard household flies from what I'm able to tell. But they're really great at ruining the dinner. As soon as you put food out, it's you're doing more swatting than you're doing eating. So I'm calling to see if you have any suggestions as to what I could do to really kind of prevent this from happening or you know, steer them in another direction.
Well, that's an excellent way to put it. First, this is a problem when you live in an urban area in the summer. At your house, and anything you can control or direct on your block, you would not believe what a difference it makes if people move to actual trash cans, for instance, instead of putting out their trash in things like plastic bags. Covered trash cans are a great defense not only against flies, but against yellow jackets, which you don't want coming to dinner either in the summertime. Now, more importantly, at your home, in your backyard, what you want is to have fly traps out all day long. You want to put them out really early in the summer, keep them clean, and keep changing them out, but always have them out, always with fresh bait. And these are things that you can make yourself or buy commercially, but they are simply a vessel that the fly can easily get into, but then cannot easily get out of. And you can bait them with a little bit of old cat food, or a rotten peach is really good. Anything like that. Anything that's going to attract flies and has a lot of smell. But if you've got those out all day long, they're going to really limit the number of flies who are left when you sit down. And then when you sit down, there is a very simple, inexpensive device that can make your dinner fly free. And that is just a basic high-strength oscillating fan trained on the table. Now, admittedly, this may chill your food. You have to eat a little bit fast. But if you have a fan blowing behind you and going across the table, flies and mosquitoes are not that strong of a flyer. They can't fly against the fan. And if the traps work well enough, you may find that you don't need the fans most nights, so it's very easy to turn them off. But if you have a combination of traps that have been out all season, and again, you're emptying them, cleaning them, refilling them with fresh bait, and it's very emotionally satisfying. You know, you're in Fishtown, so when you empty these things, you have to taunt the dead insects inside, going, "Hey, you picked the wrong backyard to show up in, didn't you?"
and give them a warning.
Yeah. But in an urban situation, traps and fans are your best friends. And, of course, you know, if eventually nothing works, if the area is just too thick with them, you just set up, screening around your table. You make a little gazebo.
Yeah.
But I would start with traps and a fan.
All righty. Well, we still have hopefully a couple more weeks of nice weather here, and I'll give it a go.
All right. Good luck, James.
Thank you.
Take care, sir.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Tina, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi. How are you?
I am just ducky today. Tina, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Great Tennessee weather we're having today.
What part of Tennessee?
Nashville.
All right. What can we do for Tina in Tennessee?
I am a recent new homeowner.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I know nothing about trees, shrubs. I think I just ruined my lilies because I cut them down. So I'm basically... I am so illiterate when it comes to this kind of stuff. And so I'm guessing needing some resources as to like a book or something, because I have no idea what shrubs I have. I have no idea what trees I have. So I'm kind of at a loss.
Okay. Now,
it needs some resources.
Right. So what happened to the previous owners of the house? Did you interact with them when you bought the house? Are they still available?
No, she was an older lady and had to go to a nursing home.
Okay. Did you interact with any children or anything like that?
The son ended up doing all the transactions with selling the house.
Okay, so here's stage one.
Mm-hmm.
Ask him if he could come out to the landscape and tell you what he knows about the plants that were there. And have you met your neighbors yet?
Yes, I have.
And does anybody there have, like, a nice garden?
They have nicer lawns than I have, for sure.
Lawns and gardens are kind of different animals. If you go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, and go to Garden Answers A to Z and go down to L. And if you take a couple of days, because there are probably 30 of them there, read the articles on lawn care. By the time you're done, you're halfway through, you'll be an expert. Lawns are essentially easy. There are just a couple of very firm rules that if you follow them, you'll have a lush lawn without chemicals. And if you disobey them, you'll have a brown lawn no matter how much you pile on it. So it's all in the cutting height and the watering, and that's easy for you to learn. What I would suggest for your second resource is as you get to know your neighbors, ask them, do they know anything about plants? Can they identify the various trees and shrubs in your backyard? Because they've probably seen them growing for years throughout the seasons.
Sure.
The third resource would be your local county extension office. You'd call up the Maine, or you'd go online and search the Maine office for Tennessee. But every county has a local office. And sometimes you never know what their budget is like or anything like that. But sometimes if you explain yourself, one of the county agents can come out and take a quick look at your property while you have a notebook handy or you're filming them or something. And they'll go, that's an azalea. That's only pruned after it finishes blooming in the spring. That's a butterfly bush. You cut it back after it starts growing in the spring. And they can walk you through them. If not, there is a secondary resource available through the same offices, which is the Master Gardener program.
Oh, okay.
Master gardeners are people who love plants and who volunteer to help gardeners in their area. Yeah, they attend fairly extensive training. I mean, literally, they take a college course on botany and the horticulture that is specific to their region. Master gardeners are very regionalized. And if an extension agent can't come out, ask if there's a master gardener who might be available to come out for an hour some afternoon, drop by, and tell you what you got. And then the final resource would be if there's a garden club in your area. all of those people can come and give you a good idea of what you have and what needs what. But I will tell you right away, as you already seem to have experienced, it is better to do nothing than the wrong thing. When people move into a house, they often want to establish these gigantic landscapes, and it's like, no, don't you notice that you have no water pressure in half the house? You know, fix up the things yeah. in the house and watch the landscape for an entire year. See what emerges from the ground in the spring bulbs and the herbaceous perennials that die back to the ground. See what blooms and what time of year. Get some advice, get some names. You got a lot of resources available locally. It's a great way to get to know your neighbors if they can contribute yeah. knowledge to you. And don't be in a rush to make any changes other than maybe in the way the lawn is handled.
Thank you.
Take care and good luck in your new house.
All right. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind our listeners in coolish climes that it's last call to plant some garlic cloves for harvest next year, just about time to plant spring bulbs for bloom next year, and prime time to be collecting and shredding fall leaves for mulching and compost making. We'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, drop those pruners and step away from the plants. We will tell you all the things you should not do that fall under the category of cleaning up the garden for the winter. You might wind up clearing yourself out of living plants. You won't want to miss it. It's coming up after lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Missy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello. How are you?
I am just ducky today. Missy, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
And where is Missy pretty good?
I am in Shattuck, Oklahoma. It's in northwest Oklahoma, almost in the plains.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Missy in Oklahoma?
Well, I have a tree that is dying and almost looks like a great big maple, but every time we cut off a dead limb, it's hollowed out down the center of it.
Hmm.
Like, like a worm has got in there and ate out of it, but it's just hollow all the way down the center. And what I'm afraid is, what is this? Is it a worm? Is it a weevil? Is it a disease? Do I need to protect my other trees, or can I save it?
Well, first let's start with, how did it leaf out in the spring?
Only the center trunk, then all the rest of it was dead, just dead limbs all around.
Right. And have you removed all the dead limbs?
All that we could get. There's some others that are so high up, you know, 20 feet up, we can't get.
Right.
Unless I, you know, we hire a professional to come over and cut it.
Right. But the center of the tree, the central leader, the very top of the tree, still has leaves coming out.
Yes, it does. But they're yellow. They're kind of a yellow color. They're not a good green color.
Right. So when you have taken off a branch, you say the center of the branch is hollow and it goes hollow into the tree from the branch collar?
Now, right into the main branch, it's not hollow, but the branch itself, it's almost like somebody took a rotarooter and went right through the center of it.
Right. And
you can see little holes where, I don't know, where it's wormholes boring into the center of it.
Oh, okay.
And that's what it was, or if it's beetles, I don't know if it's a disease or what.
No, it's not a disease. Do you see these holes on the outside of the tree?
Only after the bark has, because the bark was falling off all of them. Too.
And then
I see the holes.
Do you see holes or squiggly lines?
Little pinholes.
Little pinholes. Okay. If it is borers, B-O-R-E-R-S, they would most likely be a beetle species, like the emerald ash borer that's taking out all the ash trees in my part of the country. This isn't the kind of damage that's typically done by one of the creatures that has worm attached to their name. Those are all caterpillars. And webworms, for instance, make big nests up in trees, and they can slowly kill a tree by sapping its strength. But I'm not thinking of any caterpillar that actually eats into a tree. Those tend to be beetles. They tend to be imported beetles that are just ravaging our entire country right now. And I'm going to go out on a limb even and say that if your tree is already mostly dead, that these giant areas that are open, these big parts of missing tree inside limbs and stuff, I wouldn't be surprised if it was termites.
Oh, yeah.
You know, once
you have a lot of termites in this area.
Once a tree is dead, it's very easy for termites to come in and feed on the cellulose. And you don't want that happening near your house. I'll tell you right now, without looking at the tree, without anything like that, I would suggest you work out a deal to have it taken down. Those branches high up that are rotten and dead, they are potentially deadly. Anybody underneath, when one of them comes down, could be seriously injured. If the tree is on your property, you're liable if it falls on a stranger or anything like that. So even though it's heartbreaking, you probably want to get the tree taken down. And you have the time now to work with an arborist, get different quotes. It's going to be expensive, but it needs to be done. That much damage a tree is not going to come back from. And then, if the person who takes it down will be able to identify what was eating the inside of it, whether it was carpenter ants or whether it was termites, it sounds more extensive than borer damage. So if it was indeed termites, I would have some bait stations put into the ground in between where the tree was and your home. These are just big stakes you drive into the ground that have openings at the bottom to let the termites come in and feed on wood that was treated with a pesticide. So that kills the termite colony, but you don't dig any poison trenches or spray anything near your house.
Okay.
But unfortunately, the tree is going to have to come down, and sooner than later, especially with the winds you have in Oklahoma, it's even more of a danger than in some other places.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, Missy. Sorry about the tree.
All right. Thanks.
1-888-346-9499. Steve, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for making it, Steve. Where are you, sir?
I'm in Maple Glen, Pennsylvania.
And where, Maple Glen, where is that, just outside of Philly?
It's just outside of Philly and just outside of Ambler.
Oh, okay. Very good. Near Temple Ambler Campus, the first horticultural school founded by and for women in America. What can we do for Steve near Temple's Ambler Campus?
Well, I have a question about sunflowers. I planted some sunflower seeds this spring, and they have produced fabulously. I have sunflowers that are probably about 10 feet tall, a whole bunch of them. Some are still flowering. Some are drooping. Some have lost their flowers. Some of the leaves are turning brown, and some aren't. And I'm wondering what I'm supposed to do with them.
Well, sunflowers are annual plants. They grow from seed fresh every year. Mm-hmm. And I guess, theoretically, they would regrow from dropped seed, except you will find that birds and squirrels won't allow that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They are much desired by the wildlife community.
I haven't noticed any dropping, and I'm not sure at what point they do drop.
Okay. What people who want to keep their sunflower seeds would do at this point,
mm-hmm,
is they would get a breathable cloth, and they would go out, and they would, once all the flower petals, as you said, some of them still have flower petals on the edges of the corona.
Yes.
Some of them have dropped off. Once the flower petals have all dropped off, some people would put a paper bag or some sheer curtains to cover the head and protect this developing seeds from squirrels and birds. If yours haven't noticed them, you don't have to do that. But what you want to do anytime you're saving seed, whether it's to eat the seeds or whether it's just to have a fresh source to grow out again next year,
mm-hmm,
or maybe to fill a bird feeder with in the wintertime, you want the plant to look dead. That was one of the funniest things George Ball, the head of the Burpee Seed Company, once told me, is he loved growing plants exclusively for seed because they're supposed to look terrible. You know, the red bell peppers start to get wrinkly. And then you know the seeds are ripe. The tomatoes start to get mushy. But then you know the seeds are dead ripe. The seeds they save from zucchini, they save them from the baseball bat size zucchini because you know the seeds are full-sized and ripe. So if you look carefully into that head, you will see the seeds in there. Now, your seed packet, if you still have it, had a number of days on the front. It may have said 90 days, 100 days, 120 days. So that's the number of days from the time you put your seed in the ground to when those seeds should be ready to harvest. And it's pretty easy to tell. As you know, even though they're drooping over now, those heads are still nice and sturdy.
Mm-hmm.
So all you have to do is get up close to one of the heads and rub your finger across the seed area inside the corona gently. And if the seeds are ripe, they will begin to pop out and fall into your hand. Then again, if you want to save the seeds yourself, for yourself, you would then cut the stalk off just below the flower head, bring it inside, let it air dry in a cool, dry spot, not in direct sun, don't heat it, don't chill it, and then let it continue to dry until the seeds all fall out whenever you rub your hand across that.
That's for eating, not planting.
Well, that's either way.
Oh, okay.
That's either way. Once the seeds fall out on their own, they are finished. They can be then toasted and roasted and eaten as sunflower seeds or used in any recipe that you have that you would buy sunflower seeds for. And or you can save some for replanting next year. Just keep them in a cool, dry spot. You want to put them in a jar, make sure they're bone dry, and keep the jar in a place where the temperature and the relative humidity add up to less than 100. So that's generally not a problem in the winter when the indoor humidity tends to drop. So you don't want to keep them in, like, the bathroom or the kitchen where the humidity can be artificially higher from cooking and washing.
So an unheated garage would be an ideal place, I guess.
You know, you want to be careful about freezing and refreezing. But, yeah, cool and dry is the name of the game. And then you can plant those seeds again next year. You'll be on your way to developing your own heirloom variety. Or you can leave them standing or leave one or two of them standing, and that's great natural bird food. That's the form that I think birds should always be eating bird seed in, is from the actual plant. And it's you'll attract as many birds as a bird feeder would.
Okay. All right, Micah, thank you.
All right, good luck, Steve.
All right, appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Margie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks for talking with me.
Well, thank you for talking with me, Margie. I can remember a time in my life where I couldn't get any girls to talk to me.
Well, now you can because you have information that we want.
Yeah, if I'd only known that in high school, but I was incapable of holding information, much less than sharing it. So where's Margie?
I'm in South Bend, Indiana.
Oh, famous town. What can we do for you?
Well, about almost 20 years ago, I bought this little house, and it had a sloping lawn up to the front steps, and I didn't want to mow that. So I came up with this brilliant idea that I would plant native flowers, and I did that, and that might have worked, except that the folks next door moved in with three Rottweilers. They kept tied up all day, and then they would let them loose at night. And where the Rotties wanted to run was across my newly planted yard. So they pretty much tore that up. So plan B was daylilies. So I thought, I'll just have a bank of daylilies, and it'll look spectacular. And it just looks like crud.
Now,
it never looked good.
Now, I don't know about the laws in South Bend, but you're not allowed to let dogs run free in most places, and I would say...
I pointed that out to my neighbors, and they said, oh, they didn't know how the dogs had gotten loose.
Okay, so are the dogs fenced in now?
No, the dogs are gone. Everyone's gone.
Okay, yeah. You got a clean slate now.
Well, sort of. I mean, I planted that whole area to daylilies. And what I had read was that they would choke out weeds and all of this. Well,
yeah, good luck with that.
Weeds are very smart. They just grow around and up. So when I get my daylilies, they just look like, you know, kind of sad-looking daylilies with lots of weeds interspersed.
Okay, so here's, and you say it's on a slope, right?
Yes.
How big an area are we talking about?
Well, it's three areas. There's a middle area that's probably about 6 feet by 8 feet.
Oh, can of corn, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's two side areas that are probably each at least 20 feet, if not a bit more. And then, I don't know, 6 or 8 feet wide.
Okay. So the one area that is really workable, like the 6 by 8 feet, what I would recommend there, that sounds like an ideal place to put in a raised bed garden. Just try to rescue any daylilies you can, but then dig up everything, level it out, raise the soil so that the soil is like 6 inches to a foot higher than the surrounding area, and then mark that off with pavers or any kind of non-toxic wood, or maybe since there's nothing around to destroy it, you can just make it a nice mound. Now, by tilling up the soil, you'll be throwing away or composting all the big weeds you pull. But by tilling up the soil, you're going to create new weed seeds. So what you need to do is you'll level that area, water it every morning for 2 weeks, and then at the end of 2 weeks, just slice off with a sharp hoe anything that comes up out of the ground. Now you'll have a weed-free bed. Now you can replant your daylilies or something else like that, but make sure you mulch the in-between areas with shredded leaves or pine straw or something like that, and do the same thing with the other areas. Now, if one of the areas is really big, and if it's really slopey, you can get an estimate from a landscaper on terracing it. So instead of a slope, you would have a terraced garden that you could like walk down that would be like a garden of steps. And then you would have a level planting area on each level. Because these sloped gardens, they're no fun whether you're trying to mow them or grow in them.
Yeah, which is what I was trying to avoid. I thought if it's just, you know, native flowers, they'll just kind of take care of themselves.
They will if you get all the weeds out, establish what we call a stale seed bed by doing what I said. Then you're starting with a clean slate. But then nature abhors a vacuum. So you put in a lot of plantings, but you have to mulch the bare areas or you're going to have weeds move in.
Gotcha.
Any area that you don't plant, nature will plant for you.
Gotcha. I like it.
All right. Good luck, Marge.
Thank you so much for your help.
My pleasure. You take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind our listeners in coolish climes that it's last call to plant some garlic cloves for harvest next year. Just about time to plant spring bulbs for bloom next year, and prime time to be collecting and shredding fall leaves for mulching and compost making. We'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to the question of the week. Why garden cleanup for the winter often means the end of life for many of your most precious plants. So put down those pruners. We'll get right to it after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Buzz, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, how's America's favorite culturist of the hort doing?
I don't know. I'll have to ask him, Buzz, if he comes by. How are you, man?
I'm hanging in there, Mike.
And where is Buzz hanging in there?
In beautiful Havertown, Delaware County.
Just outside of Philadelphia. What can we do for Buzz in Havertown?
Mike, I was listening the other week, and you had a lady, young lady caller on mentioning about the sharp grass coming up through her grass.
Right.
I think you referred to a Japanese thing. Well, my brother has the same problem going on, and I'm trying to help him out with his yard. And you mentioned the cornmeal for the fall and the spring.
Right.
Now, his daughter, my niece, has a gluten allergy problem. And just to be safe, I was wondering, because she walks around in the yard barefooted and whatnot, I was wondering, is there any chance that that could cause any kind of a reaction to her?
No, and that is an incredibly common question. We get this all the time. And a matter of fact, I can remember quite clearly about a year ago, got a really angry email. You know, sometimes emails actually scream at you, even though they're just typed out.
You can read into them.
And this guy was furious that I kept referring to the natural pre-emergent wheat and feed as corn gluten meal, because he says, there's no gluten in corn. It's impossible to have corn gluten meal. And I started to think about it, and I realized, well, he's right. Corn is a gluten-free food. Where did the gluten come from? And I asked our lawn care expert, Nick Christians of Iowa State University, who did the original research that showed if you applied it at the right time of year, corn gluten meal would feed the lawn and prevent the germination of any weed seeds that were going to sprout over the next month. And he said it was all just a huge, dumb mistake that somebody not involved with the research sent out in a press release, and it just took off like wildfire. Everybody started asking for corn gluten meal, and the genie was out of the bottle because you couldn't go back and call it cornmeal because it's really not cornmeal. It's a very specialized process that starts with corn starch, believe it or not. But no,
wow.
There's no gluten in it. It's very high in nitrogen, and it is great for lawns. Again, if you put it down at the right time, which in the spring is when the soil temperature reaches 55 degrees as measured 4 inches down, which tends to coincide with the opening of forsythia and red buds. And in the fall, just as the real last heat wave of summer finishes up, you can prevent any of the weeds, I should say all of the weeds if you do spring and fall, that come from drop seed. And I believe Japanese stilt grass, for all of its energy and the way it drives people crazy, is an annual. So if you prevent the germination of its seed, you can really get a good handle on it. And yes, it would be perfectly safe for this young lady to walk on it. But if we were talking about a byproduct of wheat, for instance, I would not be cavalier at all. I would be very cautious. But luckily, there's no gluten in corn gluten meal.
That's right.
So corn gluten meal in the spring and fall, the most important thing, if you listen to the show, is never cut that lawn lower than 3 inches. Always use a sharp blade. Always leave the clippings behind. But yes, it's perfectly safe for people who are gluten intolerant, despite the name.
Yeah, she's a great niece, and I wouldn't want to do anything to harm her.
All right,
Mike,
Buzz.
Again, you're the greatest. Listen every week. Can't wait to talk to you again.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Thank you, Mike.
1-888-346-9499. Ray, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Oh, thank you, Mike. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you, Ray. Where are you from, man?
Princeton Junction, New Jersey.
All right, right next to Princeton, New Jersey, I suppose.
Yeah, it is.
But it's function at the junction.
Yes, the railroad comes directly through there, and thousands of people board the train every day.
And are they going to Philly? Are they going to New York? Where are they going?
Both.
Okay. All right. What can we do for Ray at the center of the known universe in Princeton Junction, New Jersey?
Well, I have a rhododendron challenge.
Okay.
I have planted a number of rhododendron about 14 months ago.
Okay.
And the plants are rather healthy.
Mm-hmm.
However, here and there, I have a small branch, a twig,
mm-hmm.
that will begin to wilt, droop, and eventually die, and I have to trim it off.
Okay.
And this has been going on for a few months now.
Okay. In general, what's the general health like of the plants?
I think it's excellent. It bloomed this spring, and it has healthy new buds for the next bloom.
Okay. Okay. So, number one, it sounds like you need a hobby. It sounds like you need more to do. Second, one thing about rhododendrons that people don't understand is they do tend to be magnificent plants, but there are times a year when they just don't look their best. You know, those cranky, kind of dried out looking branches that you're talking about.
Yes.
Sometimes in the spring, I'll get my best blooms on one of those.
Oh, my.
But that's okay.
Unfortunately, these twigs are dying completely.
Okay, so there could be some issues involved here. Let's talk about culture. Are they fed and or mulched?
Yes.
Okay, give me the details.
Well, we certainly have a mulch over the surface. The ground is loose, and I've been using a fertilizer called Miracle-Gro.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, now, yeah, you're killing it.
Oh, really?
Yes. First of all, these native shrubs, they don't need chemical salts, and these chemical salts do build up in the soil over time. Miracle-Gro is also a very high nitrogen fertilizer, and your rhododendron, well, your rhododendron doesn't want any chemical fertilizers, so no more of that. And I'm presuming that this is some form of wood mulch under the plants?
Yes.
And what color is it, Ray?
It's just a regular brown licorice root type look.
Oh, okay, okay. So get rid of all the mulch. Go pile it up somewhere. And when it turns into compost, maybe you can use it around other plants. Rhododendrons are acid-loving plants. Rhododendrons and azaleas are in the same family. They occur naturally in areas that essentially are peat bogs. They're kind of wet. They are very acidic. The soil is loose. And there's also a good amount of natural nutrition in the soil. So I can solve your rhododendron dieback problem instantly. No more Miracle-Gro. And really, you must get rid of that mulch. There are certain plants that can tolerate wood mulch if it's applied properly, but your rhododendrons aren't one of them. These chips are making the soil more alkaline, which is not what your plant needs to survive. You know, generally, most plants go with normal soil, but some plants in our landscape, blueberries, azaleas, rhododendrons, camellias, really require an acidic soil. So the best way to do this, you've seen at the garden center these big bricks of peat moss.
Yes.
And you see how they come in all different sizes now?
Yes.
Pick the size that you think you'll need. And what I want you to do is bring it home, rip it open, and then spread 2 inches of peat moss all around the bare ground under your plants after you remove the wood mulch. And then ideally cover that with an inch of compost. No more wood mulch. If you got to use your wood mulch, use it someplace else. Not near roses. That's for a different reason. But not under any acid-loving plants. You were so right to call because you were going to slowly kill off the plants with the Miracle-Gro and the wood mulch. This would have been a very sad future.
Thank you very much.
But a nice mulch of peat moss covered with compost, it sounds like you might otherwise have the perfect conditions for them. They are going to fly. They're going to be out of control. And, you know, be careful with that licorice root mulch if it's anywhere near your house. What's your house made of, the siding?
It's a stucco house.
Okay, because this mulch can breed artillery fungus that'll stain the side of a light-colored house.
Ah.
So you don't want to use any kind of wood mulch within 30 feet of a light-colored home or car. You can look up artillery fungus. You can see great macro images of it shooting its spores at objects. It's it's a non-miracle of nature. Okay, so your rhododendrons are totally fixed. This is a perfect time of year to do it. They're going to hit the ground running in spring. The only thing you're going to notice is the improvement.
Thank you very much.
All right, good luck, Ray.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. A perennial favorite, garden cleanup and fall pruning reminders. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden. Get us started with this week's intriguing questions.
Sure, Mike. Ruth in Dayton, Ohio writes, I need to know how to prepare my plants for the winter. I have two butterfly bushes, one of which is a new growth from an older bush. What do I need to do to prepare them for winter?
Nothing. Like crepe myrtle, butterfly bush is a perennial that blooms in the summer. Unless its owner thinks they need to do something to prepare for the winter, and then it will probably die. Just leave it alone to survive winter untouched and then prune it back about 2 weeks after it starts growing again in the spring.
Well, Ruth continues, I also have a rose bush in the back. It did not bloom this year, but did grow and seems to be very healthy and strong. How do you prepare this bush for winter?
Ha! The exact same way, by leaving it alone. Roses are winter hardy in all but the coldest climates. Again, unless you prune them in the fall, and then they could die, or maybe just not bloom the following year. Hint, hint. Pruning in the fall stimulates new growth that just sucks the energy out of these plants while they're trying to go dormant.
Right. And that lush new growth can freeze solid on the first really cold night. So leave the plant alone until it greens up in the spring. But what about roses in those coldest climates?
Well, in the very coldest regions, plants like roses and grapevines do need to be protected. You have to wait until the plants are completely dormant and then cover them completely with loose soil, shredded leaves in a wire cage, a rose cone, or some other protective device.
Can you prune the plants back first?
Well, you have to prune grapevines because they're so big. Roses can be pruned if they're really ginormous, but you have to leave as much of the plant standing as possible. And don't prune anything until it's completely dormant. And then be sure to uncover them as soon as the worst of winter is over.
Ruth concludes, lastly, I have a sunflower which did very well this year. The stalk is beginning to bend. How do I prepare this plant for winter?
Well, sunflowers are annual plants. Their life is going to end with the first frost. Now, a lot of people will leave their sunflower stalks in place so birds can feed on the seeds. If you want those sunflower seeds, cut the heads off after they're completely brown and bring them inside to dry in a cool, dark spot.
We move on to Bridget and Brian in beautiful Shepherdstown, West Virginia, who write, we have an Italian fig tree that was planted this spring as a 2 or 3 year old plant. It's approximately 3 feet tall and is doing fabulous. Any advice on winterizing would be very much appreciated. Ha! Half of the gardens in America seem to have fig trees.
Well, it is one of our most frequent email topics, and the timing here is good, as the answer's a tricky one. Figs are true Mediterranean plants that don't naturally experience winter, and they should be protected in USDA Zone 7 and lower. You know, I'd say 7 and below, but below kind of means technically south, while the lower zones are moving up north and... All right. Okay. So figs growing in a protected area that's close to a structure generally need less serious protection than figs that are growing out in an open, exposed area. No matter what, the minimum I'd suggest in places with cold winters is a burlap windbreak. Drive some stakes into the ground about a foot away from the outside of the plant and wrap burlap around the stakes. Do not wrap the actual plant.
Right. The burlap would get wet, the heavy wet burlap would freeze, and bye-bye fig. Is there a way to continue the burlap over top of the plant?
Not really. Think about it. It had sagged down after the first wet snow. Even if you made a little house of open wooden beams as a frame and stapled the burlap tight over the top.
Could you put a piece of, say, plexiglass over top of wooden supports?
No, for the same reason you don't want to use plastic to wrap the tree. It would heat up and bring the fig out of dormancy during that first sunny week in the middle of winter. But you know, you could secure a thick block of wood or metal on top of an open wooden frame that itself was wrapped in burlap. Then you're talking serious winter protection.
Well, what about pruning the tree to make it fit?
If it's really enormous and you wait until it's dormant, I guess so. But anything 6 feet or under should just be protected. These trees really need to start the spring with a solid 4 feet of healthy growth to have enough time to produce ripe figs. Save your pruning for after you unwrap the tree in the spring, and then only cut off the parts that suffered winter damage. If a lot of the greenery survives winter, you're going to get a lot of figs that summer. Well, that sure was some interesting information about not killing your plants this winter now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with links to more detailed articles about figs, roses, and proper pruning, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to prune my peaches if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. Well, you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email with your location. You're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore, as long as they tell us their location, at garden@whyy.org. Oh, and please include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location, but where you will find the answers to all of those questions you are going to email us, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz and Lauren Elkins keep our website tidy. The well-pruned Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Blooming Al Banks is our editor. Intern Stephen Drehobol just got caught sniffing sunflowers. I'm Sonny Mike McGrath. I always leave my sunflowers standing as food for the finches. And I'll see you and them next week. What can you expect to hear next week? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I have no idea what we're going to do. Only that it will be fun and that I will get into trouble. Plus your fabulous phone calls.